my next guests are not arsonists. We're not here to burn down the house. But if the house does burn down, you might want to call Alvin and Lawrence Ubel.
I'm a little bit of a pyromaniac.
Are you?
It was an outgrowth of my mother. When she wanted me to eat spinach, she would take a little, like the old egg crates, you know, from the a dozen eggs, and she would put it into a bowl, and she would light it, and my eyes would open up, and I'd open up my mouth, and she would stuff the spinach down my throat. So,
and we could discuss your other therapy issues next week.
Next time, Playing with Matches with Alvin Ubel. meanwhile, the Ubels, you should know, are also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And they visit us once a month here on the show to talk about home repair, take your calls. And we also usually have a little quiz. And since we're tight for time, I thought that we would try to get things moving along. And
let's go away.
You want to throw out the quiz?
This is not a little quiz. It's going on for 3 months now.
No, yeah. This is what is the name given to the fire-rated encapsulated enclosure of a beam or a column, sometimes called the box enclosure. All you people, you should have at least googled your butts off on this one.
Yes,
you're giving three options for the answer.
Yes, and the other thing.
Anything close, right?
Close, yeah. And you'll get
maybe one or the other.
And you'll get the book that my father wrote with his partner, George Merlis, Save Money, Save Energy.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Anything you want to say before we start taking these calls?
Save energy.
That's it.
Save energy. Mm-hmm. That's either part of this economy that's going on. If you want to save money, you're going to have to save energy, because everything from gasoline to the car, to the house, turn off the lights, use less hot water. There are so many things that people can do to save energy. It's unbelievable.
And there's energy audit on our website. They can look at that at www.accuratebuilding.com, or just Google Ubel and eventually you'll find us.
One of the things that a lot of people do, I don't know how much energy it uses up, but you know the chargers for cell phones, they leave them in the plug and the thing just keeps on, if they have a light, the light just keeps on going on, which means they're still drawing energy.
But there are some that actually, I think there's more sophisticated technology. Most of them are the antiquated type, which stay plugged in all the time. And that goes true with all those little adapters for, let's say, the speaker system on your computer, speakers, or the transformer that powers your scanner, that though you shut off the scanner, that's still on.
But the TV is always on, when it's off.
But people unplug that so it doesn't burst into flames.
But there's also all of the microwaves have a special thing that there's clocks running all the time. There is something using up a little bit of electricity. Sometimes you just can't help yourself if you want to live in this technological world of ours. But got to turn off the lights. When you leave the bathroom, turn off the light. People say, well, it takes more energy to turn it back on. That's baloney.
Oh, you almost said something.
Yes.
Oh, we're not going to let you.
Yeah, you almost said fiddlesticks.
Let's take some calls.
Well, who'd you watch this?
Lauren from Manhattan, you're not going to say anything that's going to get me in trouble, are you?
No, definitely not. I have HVAC units through the wall in my brownstone. I'm so excited to be getting on this call.
Yes.
And we don't like them. They're breezy and a lot of noise comes through.
Are you talking about just through the wall air conditioning, or air conditioning and heating?
Air conditioning and heat. I think they're technically called PTAC units.
PTAC, yes. And they're that is a problem, because you're getting all the air from one corner of the room, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And also, so the system tends to not be as balanced as one would like it to be.
It's either really hot or really cold, and it's always pretty noisy.
And
I was wondering about putting in radiant heating under the floor to at least take care of the heat.
Well, the problem with radiant heat, especially, is this is an owned apartment, I would assume. You own this apartment?
We own. It's 1.5 floors in a brownstone.
That may not be as cost effective.
But also, there's quite a bit of heat loss on them also, because heat goes in all directions. So what's below you?
Another apartment.
What I would try doing is, you probably don't want that either. The use of either fans or ceiling fans and things like that tend to homogenize the air, especially if you run them at very slow speed.
That's a good point.
So I would actually try that. As far as additional even heating, because the problem with the radiant heat is, again, you're dealing with electric resistance heating. because there's no other way to get the heat there. You don't
but
have
you,
a hot
but
water.
But you don't want to have it. Put space heaters up.
That's
in the
well, putting in a radiant heat, which is basically a pad, an electric resistance pad that goes underneath the floor, is still the same thing as having a regular space heater.
There's it's really, like it's a controlled. It's a light. It's a big light bulb. But no light comes out of it; just heat comes out of it.
So it's,
that's what a resistance heater is.
So it's not really that cost effective. I would actually try homogenizing the space with the use of fans. I would try that first. If it doesn't work, either contact me directly or just try to get through on the phone.
The way people can contact you is by writing Larry@ubell.com,
and I've gotten to most of
UBELL.com,
and most people have gotten to me. Don't write the show because they'll just forward it to me in a bunch, and then I get overwhelmed.
Is there any way to address the noise?
Not they, it's me.
The noise. Noise.
And air that comes
well,
through?
The noise is actually the speed of the fan, and doesn't it have a variable speed on the fan?
No, I mean, even when it's off, a lot of street noise comes through.
Oh, it doesn't have a baffle in it, sound baffles.
Maybe. This is a new installation, isn't it?
No, this is from, like, the 80s.
Oh, well, that might even be worse than. I'm thinking they might have left something out.
Lauren, sell the place.
Yeah.
I wish
actually,
I could.
You should really write me because we have to do a lot of back and forth, okay?
Okay, well, thank you.
And you should include
a phone number, right?
Definitely include. Everyone should include phone numbers. You might get a personal radio show for yourself.
Jay from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have kind of a complicated problem.
Well, as compared to the last woman, right?
Exactly.
Okay, fine.
But in the bigger picture, it's even more complicated.
Okay.
I live near Prospect Park, and I'm close to by the pond in the park.
Yes.
I've heard that there's water underneath, like there's that pond goes, you know, maybe to the Greenwood Cemetery, or I don't know.
Yes, it definitely streams out and streams in all directions. Go on.
I have a house, a wood house, and I have a lot next door.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm either going to add upstairs on the wood house because it wasn't built all the way back on the second floor.
Right.
And my architect said I could do that, or maybe I'll build on the house on the lot next door.
Yeah.
But I also live near the subway, and I get these vibrations from the subway.
But this is the F train in Windsor Terrace?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and,
I would move.
I know that my neighbor has had termites, and I've had termites treated.
Yeah, that area is Termitesville.
But what's your bottom line question?
Well, I mean, one thing, I talked to an architect, and he talked about maybe doing a test boring where they go down 20 feet, and they charge you $1,200, and they say, all right, well, you know, whatever is under. Should I be concerned about the ground? And, you know, especially I'm also concerned about global warming, and I'm thinking that there's going to be a hurricane in the next 20 years, which I'd like to live in the house.
Well,
so I'm thinking I'm going to get at least one hurricane.
Let me tell you about Windsor Terrace. Windsor Terrace has a lot of problems because when they built the Prospect Avenue Expressway, they did a lot of blasting in order to cut away the stone that enabled them to come through. And a lot of houses in that area are settling and undermining. To this day, they're still continuing to settle. In order to find out whether you can do what you want, the boring may not be the trick to it. The idea is to analyze what you can do as far as zoning and the building is concerned, and then talk to your architect, find out the maximum that you could do with that building, and then take a look at it, and maybe we can dampen the building so you don't get the vibration from the subway system and also control the building itself.
I also have to say that your concern about hurricane and that sort of thing is not a big concern considering how inland you are. Where my father lives over in Manhattan Beach, that house might get blown away. I live on Staten Island. Probably a little less inland than you, quite a bit more less inland than you are, and I'm not that concerned. So that kind of issue, but as far as...
I think he's worried because he doesn't think the house is anchored.
Well, that's why the boring test is so required. And I think they're going to go down way farther than 20 feet, but, you know, you have to... That's part of the cost of doing construction is you have to make sure that the soil is adequate and... for supporting the building you want to stick on top of it.
But you have to do a study, but you have to carefully do the study because the study can cost you more than the building.
Thanks for calling, Jay. Alice from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I live in a brownstone. It's rented.
Mm-hmm.
The windows leak a lot of air,
mm-hmm.
and every year I try to put that rope caulking on, mm-hmm. and it gives me grief. It's always breaking, and then after several weeks, it starts falling off.
You mean you put the caulk around where the gaps are?
Right.
Okay.
Is there any tricks that you could give me?
Yes. What you can do is, before you do any caulking, you have to cleanse the area where the caulk is going to be placed. In other words, whatever caulk is there before has to be cut out, and then you have to take some either alcohol or some other kind of solvent to wash away any residue that may be on the material that you're about to caulk. And then wait till that dries, and then use a good acrylic kind of caulk or a butyl rubber caulk, which will hold for many, many, many years. But the preparation is very important.
I need to ask a question first. Is this caulk a permanent installation?
No.
Oh, so in other words, you're just caulking around the gaps in the window.
Right.
Right. What I would recommend is stop doing that and buy the plastic cover that goes on. They put double-faced tape around all the top, bottom, and the sides.
Do plastic.
And put the plastic on, and then you hit it with a hairdryer, and it tightens it up, and it looks pretty good, and then you don't have to worry about it.
You winterize your window.
You winterize your window.
You mean the sheets of plastic?
Right, the sheets of plastic, but they're specially designed to go on windows, so they shrink to fit, and they come with double-faced tape.
And then you can take them off in the summertime,
right,
and then put them back on the next winter.
Not always. Sometimes you take them off, you never get them back on again.
Okay, well, you get another one.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Miss Mary Sunshine.
Well, because as John McCain said last night, quoting Teddy Roosevelt, you can caulk softly but carry big shtick.
That's what I heard, too.
We have to take a little break here. We'll be back with the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. Our number, 212-433-9692. And nobody's called to answer the quiz. Boy, this quiz could go on for years. Have you heard about our new Redraw the Electoral Map Challenge? We invite you to give us your creative take on how this year's electoral map may end up looking. Entries are due at the end of next week, so get going, start drawing. Check out our show page at WNYC.org to find out more. And we're back with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell, taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And remember, there's a quiz in effect. What's the name given to the fire-rated or encapsulated enclosure of a beam or column, sometimes called a boxed enclosure? We have a couple of people who are willing to take the chance. One of them is Rocco from Brooklyn. What do you think it is, Rocco?
You know what? I didn't hear the question properly.
Okay. So you probably give us the wrong answer.
Yeah, well, I thought you were talking about the envelope of a wall, the fire stopping or the fire blocking.
No. This is a specific name or series of names that they give to a steel column or beam in order to fire rate it. In other words, putting the fire retardant material around it, and in order so that the beam is not exposed, they box it out in a square or round or whatever they do. But
they used to put asbestos on it.
Asbestos,
in the old days.
But now they're using cement and all other kinds of things, and they use like wire lath or even gypsum board or something like that. But it encloses that, encapsulates the column or beam. We're looking for the name that they call that.
And Clark from the Bronx, what do you think?
Channel rail.
Pardon?
Channel rail.
No, that's not it.
But it was a nice thought.
It was.
Yeah, okay. So thank you for calling, and keep trying. And we go now to Ralph from New York. Hi, Ralph.
Hi.
Yeah, what's up?
I live in a very old building with very old wiring and very thick floors and ceilings.
Right.
In fact, it's that, what do they call it, knob and something?
Knob and tube?
Knob and tube.
Ooh.
Pre-wire nuts.
Yep.
Wiring.
Right.
The apartment upstairs is renovating, and they've had to knock out all of the cement in their kitchen and in their bathroom, and now I'm getting shorts.
Yeah, because probably it's falling on the wire connections that are tenuous at best.
Right. So the question is, who's at fault here?
Is this a condo co-op?
It's a co-op.
Well, bottom line is actually it's the co-op that's at fault.
Well, they're claiming that the ceiling that the floors are so thick mm-hmm. that they can't possibly be affecting my wiring.
Well, that's
not true.
That's because they're lawyers and doctors and dentists and teachers.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Because I put my hand up against the ceiling when they were knocking, and the vibrations were intense. I mean, they were using sledgehammers.
You know what you need to do? You need to get an independent person in there
right,
who's not working
thinking.
For you and who's not working for them, who can consult and say, you know, bottom line is, and I'm going to say this right now, it's dangerous having the knob and tube. It should all be taken out. It should all be abandoned.
Uh-huh.
It should all not be used anymore.
Right.
I don't know how more definitive I can say.
Right.
It's dangerous. And the fact that you're having problems, the fact that it's flickering is it's causing arcing. Arcing is what causes fires. Fires is what kills people.
I've been here for 30 years, and this is the first time I've
Right, because no one's really done anything, but now there's a problem, and it's got to be dealt with.
What's also probably happening is because of the vibrations of when they're doing the construction, the knob and tubes are put in with regular nails
mm-hmm.
through the porcelain knobs, mm-hmm. and those nails are probably oxidized completely away. There's nothing left.
Probably corroded out, yes.
And so what happened is the knobs come off and the wire falls down on the corrosion that's right there on at the wire section because some of the insulation is gone and it's bare wire by this time.
Yes.
So this is what's taking place in that wall section.
So what I'm saying is, he's just reiterating, it needs to be abandoned and replaced.
Thank you for calling us, Joel. Was it Joel? Maggie from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have somewhat of a similar problem. I had a licensed electrician
mm-hmm.
replace a ceiling fixture in my rent control apartment.
Right.
And now I find that the bulbs that I put in, even those supposedly long-lasting bulbs, are not lasting more than a month. And in fact, one of them, when it burned out, the bulb was, the socket was in the socket, but the bulb had cracked off. So I want to know. I feel it's dangerous. I want to know what should be done. What the problem is.
Well, first of all, my first instinct is I don't know what the bulb looks like and where it is,
mm-hmm.
and whether the fixture that it screws into is ventilated properly, because that could overheat a fixture. Also, if they have, is the light flickering?
No, it doesn't flicker.
Well, then, and it's an electronic kind of on-off switch. Is it a remote control with the fan?
No, it's just a straight on and off.
It's a string. It's a string that hangs down, right?
No, it's on the wall.
On the wall. So he rewired in lights, right?
No, he didn't. That was already done.
All he
did was replace the fixture. There was an old.
I don't know if that's actually the problem. You're not getting flickering. I think it could actually be a problem with the light fixture itself. But I would actually have to see what the fixture is and look at the particulars of that fixture.
I had a similar situation in a hall
mm-hmm.
where I would put bulbs in two different fixtures on the same switch, and one would last maybe 2 months. The other one would go on for lifetime of a bulb.
Well, what happens is when many of the incandescent bulbs that you have, if a fixture is not secure properly or it's vibrating a little bit, the filaments inside those incandescent bulbs are not made for vibration like an automobile filament. That's like a little spring inside which takes up the shock. So sometimes if the fixture is not mounted properly or it's loose, that could cause...
It also could be the vibration from the fan itself.
For the fan itself also could cause that light bulb to fail.
You might want to try the compact fluorescence in this particular application and see how that works.
Okay, thank you so much for calling us. We go to Marilyn from Manhattan. Hi, Marilyn, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Sorry I can't give you the answer to your question, but I have a question for you.
Go right ahead.
I have a white tile kitchen floor, and it has been here for 14 years. It's an old GMT tile. And over the years, even though I've used a liquid to clean it, it seems to be yellowing. Is there anything I can use on the floor?
This tile that's on the floor, is a ceramic tile?
No, it's vinyl.
Oh, it's a vinyl tile,
yes.
And it is starting to age out.
Yes.
That's not unusual for old vinyl to start aging out. Sometimes the color is affected by the time or from the light or sometimes sunlight may come into a room mm-hmm. and actually change the pigment consideration of what's inside the vinyl. It does happen occasionally depending upon the quality of that particular vinyl.
Well,
how old are these tiles?
They're 14 years old. 14.
That's getting pretty up there. I mean, most of these products only have a life expectancy of 10 to 15 years anyway, 20 years max. So if it's the discoloration, I would more go look at the website. As far as bleaching is concerned, that's not going to help because the problem is it's not a biological problem.
And if she bleached it, wouldn't she actually be, in effect, destroying the vinyl?
Not
because
necessarily.
Because bleach is acid, isn't it?
Well, it is. No, bleach is not as acidic as say, vinegar.
Really?
Vinegar is even worse. But the point
could you use balsamic on this thing?
Possibly. But what you can
with a little bit of oil, some EVU,
some mustard.
In order to test it, what you can do is take a little wet and dry sandpaper in some corner where nobody's going to see it, and rub it on the surface of that tile, and see if the color changes, because there may be a skim or a skin on top of that vinyl tile that needs to be cleaned off.
Or else you're saying the other answer is vinyl tends to discolor, and either you live with it or you get new tile.
Right,
you replace it.
Jason from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, two quick questions. I have
one quick question.
Okay.
But he's going to phase it in a two-part. Go on.
Okay. An unfinished concrete basement that's all dusty. Is there a way to efficiently, without putting down a bunch of bad chemicals, to seal that up so it doesn't kick dust up everywhere?
Is this the basement floor?
Yes.
Basement floor. I'll tell you what we did in our office. We have a concrete floor that we put all over. It used to be a dirt floor, and we put concrete down, and we made a real nice, smooth job, and it was all already dusty. So we had the floor was washed off with all the residue, cleaned it up, and then I put regular deck paint down onto the floor, and I gave it about two or three coats, and it's perfect now. There is no dust at all.
Perfect.
Okay.
But they also make this stuff for garages, this coating for workshop areas. And they work actually pretty good, too. And you can look them up. I see them on Speed Channel. I see that sometimes when I'm watching races.
So. You watch races on television?
I do. I know. I'm one of those people.
My guests are the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Ubell. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692.
I'm just a regular Joe Sixpack.
Well, I know how you're going to vote in this election.
Well,
you want to know something? It is. Can I say something?
That was just a joke. No, you can't say anything.
No, but this is about that word that we gave to these people out there. Everybody's listening to this.
We have
show.
Some more calls. I'll go to them.
All right,
in a
very
moment.
Good. I think we
you
gave
want
them
to
enough,
retire it
enough
here?
Punishment. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway,
I'm sorry. Making people think is not a punishment.
Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, Amy from Port Washington?
Yes.
Hi. I have a question. My husband and I are kind of in a dispute about the heating issue in our house. Mm-hmm. I'd like to keep it, a little warmer, and he likes to keep it cooler and then every once in a while blast the air. I think it's more cost-effective to keep it, 68 consistently.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's more cost-effective to keep it at, 62 and then blast the air every once in a while.
I'm with your husband.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right.
Because when the system's off, it's off. Okay, so, I mean, if it, you disagree?
I agree with you. 100%.
Okay, fine. Okay, he's like, you know what? He's agreeing with me, but shaking his head in the no motion. No, I agree with you. Yes, you're wrong. Anyway, here's the deal. For instance, what I do with my air conditioning during the summer, when I'm out of the house, I let it ride all the way up to about 80 degrees. About an hour before I come home, get it back down to 72. That gives it the amount of time that it needs to get it down to that temperature before I walk in the door. The same thing. I mean, now what he's, if he's constantly going back and forth and playing with the thermostat, then I tend to agree with you. Okay, but if there are periods of time when you're not in the house, mm-hmm. you could definitely let the temperature settle down, unless you have, and even if you have dogs and cats, they have fur, they'll be fine, mm-hmm. To 62 degrees. And then when you, if you have a clock thermostat, which we encourage everyone to get, mm-hmm. If you have a clock thermostat and if it sets it before, let's say you get home at 6 o'clock and at 5:30 you start heating the place up, that's way more cost effective than just leaving it at 68 all day long when you're not home.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Amy.
Actually, for every degree you drop the temperature, you save 2% of your heating cost during that period.
Wow.
So for that period of time where you would normally spend, let's say you're spending $10 and you dropped it 5 degrees, that's 10%. What did I say, $10? You would save a dollar in that period of time, which is actually 2%, which would be actually almost $2.
Yeah, so. but the point is people have to realize how much time they actually spend in their home, because statistics show that we only spend maybe about 10 to 11 hours mm-hmm. a day in the home. And actually, for about 13 to 14 hours, we're someplace else. So you could save quite a bit of money by bringing that temperature down.
By the way, before I get a bad letter from my friend Cosmo, my math was off. I'll correct it for next time, so don't give me another letter. Okay?
I know Cosmo.
You do know Cosmo? Yeah, he loves writing me too, I guess.
From Park Slope. We have a call from Leonard from Fairlawn. You think you know the answer to the quiz?
Well, I'm willing to take a stab at it. It's 3 months. I can't believe that no one's answered it. I heard it the first time and haven't listened in between. Is it a chase?
No.
Okay.
That was last month we got that one.
It wasn't even a J.P. Morgan.
Yeah.
Oh, that was very bad. Tony from Fort Lee, what do you
think?
We
like to say WAMU anyway.
Good morning. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Go on.
I'm going to take a shot at the metal issue here. Is it dry-clad fiberboard?
No. It's not a material. It's a technique.
Well, we're going to – I don't know. You have to decide whether you want to do it next month as well.
I do. There's nothing wrong with that.
Now, we have a number of people who have written in before I get to some more calls.
Yes.
Anna in Summit wants to know how you prevent peeling paint in a bathroom that doesn't have a fan.
Well,
that does have a fan. That does – it already has a fan, and yet it's still peeling.
Well, the reason it's peeling is because the interface between the paint that you have on there now and the paint that was there before is not compatible to each other.
What do you mean by interface?
No, where two things are touching each
Thank
other.
Thank you.
Right. And so what happens is it's not compatible. And what has to be done in order to make it compatible, you may have to wash down the wall, scrape off all of the loose paint totally, and get a good primer that is made for interfacing paint.
Wait. I want to understand. So if you're painting a let's say you're painting a water-based paint over an enamel, an oil-based paint, sometimes one won't stick to the other?
That's exactly right. One will react on the other. And besides, they both expand and contract at two different ratios. So what happens is the latex paint absorbs water where the alkyd paint does not absorb water. So the two of them expand and contract differently.
We have very little time, but Fred in Ridgewood, Queens, I almost said Ridgewood, would like to know where he can find out about rules and regulations concerning the installation of a wood-burning stove.
Well, the wood-burning stove, we were talking about this on the way in. All equipment that's put in that's not specifically spoken about in any code has to be installed per manufacturer specifications. You got to find the specification from the manufacturer. If it's not manufactured by anyone, let's say it's an antiquated stove, I don't know if I would feel comfortable putting it in, but I would take the most stringent code or stringent guidelines for
Because you can kill yourself.
You can burn the house down. But all of them, if you're buying a new one, they should come with their things.
And we thank you for all your calls. We're sorry we couldn't get to everyone. But you can always write to Larry at Ubell, U-B-E-L-L, .com.
Larry and Ubell.
And the Ubells will be back on November 12th. And what will be happening on November 12th? But do it slowly.
We will go forth and fix.
Wait, too fast.
We will go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
Thank you both so
much. All you guys.
On tomorrow's show, Oliver Stone discusses his latest film, W, about the current president, in case you didn't figure that out. Also, Sam Robarts on his role in the new Hitchcock send-up on Broadway, The 39 Steps. We'll hear about plans to redesign Brooklyn's Grand Army Plaza. And on Underreported, in the midst of the frenzy over America's election next month, did you know that Canada is holding its elections next week?
we will find out what's at stake for our neighbors to the north. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blake Reschick, Sarah English, and Stephen Valentino. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we get help today from Angela Sheldon, Stephanie Hughes, and contributing producer Virginia Doris. Debbie Darcy is at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. Thanks for listening.